This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yeah, so our new president that comes into Nigeria, I think one of the endemic issues that needs to be addressed beyond the security thing is to begin to look at the idea of creating a framework that can handle and manage the issue of corruption.
That was Sunday Bitrus, a Nigeria expert analyst, on some of the issues that Nigeria's new president should focus on moving forward. Details coming up also. Uganda's president signs an anti-homosexuality bill that critics say is the harshest in the world. And several Ugandan soldiers were captured when Al-Shabaab militants attacked their base in Somalia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight.
Bola Ahmed Tinubu, that I would preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. So, help me God.
Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, please a round of applause for...
That was Asiwaju Bola Tinubu taking the oath of office as Nigeria's new president. As head of Africa's largest democracy, he has now taken the reins of power and many challenges lie ahead. Sunday Bitrus is a Nigeria analyst and the national president of Zumanta, an association of Nigerians in the United States working to contribute to the development of their country. He says former President Muhammadu Buhari's 2 4-year terms have left many Nigerians disappointed. One of the endemic issues the new president should tackle and address besides the country's security, Bitrus says, is a framework to tackle the issue of corruption.
Muhammad Buhari, on his arrival, he arrived with a lot of promise and a lot of hope. A lot of Nigerians were despondent and hope was projected to his candidacy. And over these several years, I would say that based on our general observation and conversation with a lot of people back in Nigeria, they have indicated, and we know, that some of those hopes and aspirations were never fulfilled. However, we expected a whole lot more, but it was never attained. And those are some of the concerns that people had with the legacy of President Muhammadu Buhari over the last 8 years.
How about Mr. Buhari utilizing Chinese loans, for instance, to upgrade the ailing road and rail infrastructure, building a new port in Lagos?
I would say yes, those will be part of his achievement. But to a large extent, I think it's some of the concerns that a lot of the regular masses are having to complain about is the drop in the standard of living. It is becoming extremely difficult for people to both improve their lives and obtain certain basic amenities that you would normally expect in a country that we would say has the potential to achieve and better the livelihoods of people. In terms of the general infrastructure, yes, those are we expect that to be a regular part of governance, and I do not think that to a large extent those cannot be undermined. Those are certainly achievements that we would accord to the Buhari administration. Yes.
Moving forward now, Tinubu trained as an accountant in the United States and worked for several U.S. companies, including as a treasurer for oil giant ExxonMobil. What should his priorities be moving forward?
Well, I think the priorities has always been the same over the last several years of civilian administration in Nigeria. I think we've had to deal with a lot of issues, which includes but not limited to the fact that there should be, for example, press freedom, increase in press freedom. And I think that the refrain we always speak about in terms of one of the core areas is in the area of security, right? And there should be integration of the people from all across the country. But in terms of providing services and supporting the administration and trying to achieve what they need to achieve, we know that Tinubu has he has a track record of working with people across board, and those are some of the fundamental areas we expect that he is going to put in place. He has to hit the ground running. The country cannot wait for several months before they appoint those who should be supporting his government in achieving their set objectives. I think those are the fundamentals in terms of what we're looking for. But again, we know that some of these priorities change from day to day. So we are looking forward to at least setting those baselines in place.
And there are these lingering questions about his health and past corruption allegations.
Yeah, I mean, there is the reputation that he comes with. And if that is the reputation that people are holding of him, we are looking to, they should make all the necessary effort to dispel those concerns, because those could potentially weigh heavily in terms of both credibility and in terms of the legitimacy. In terms of leadership role and leadership responsibility, and if he has been assigned or he has been assigned as the president or voted as the president, then he has that legitimacy in that respect. But both in terms of reputation that he will have in governance, those are certainly areas that need to be addressed as quickly as possible so people can have the confidence and the stability that they need in terms of saying, knowing that they have a president that has the capability of ruling with clean hands.
Today, a new president takes the helm in Nigeria. Anything you'd like to add?
Yes, for a new president that comes into Nigeria, I think one of the endemic issues that needs to be addressed beyond the security thing is to begin to look at the idea of creating a framework that can handle and manage the issue of corruption. Corruption is a fundamental issue that is affecting the reputation of Nigeria, both in terms of the day-to-day business of people in the country and foreign direct investors who are looking to invest in the country. They need to have a framework, and some of those frameworks are available for use for the country to minimize the effects of corruption on the country. But where there is no political will to be able to address corruption as a key area that's affecting Nigeria, that becomes a concern.
That is Sunday Beatrice, a Nigeria analyst and the national president of Zomato. He spoke with me from the U.S. state of Virginia. Many Nigerians have mixed feelings about today's inauguration of the country's new president, Bola Tinubu. Our reporter from Abuja, Nigeria, spoke to several women who expressed their feelings on the inauguration.
An entrepreneur, Rose, thinks the inauguration should not even take place as it is still being contested by the other parties.
As far as Nigerians are concerned, we are still recycling and we are still doing a continuation of the old government. But our hope is not lost because we believe God to give us a better Nigeria that we voted for.
Rose also says that since newly inaugurated President Asiwaju Bola Tinubu is from the same All Progressives Congress Party as his predecessor, Muhammadu Buhari, she expects little change in the government. Tinubu was declared the winner of the February election. However, several opposition parties have challenged the Independent National Electoral Commission's decision in court, alleging there was vote tampering and voter suppression. So far, their challenges have not made headway in the courts. Amaka is a media professional, and she has concerns about the economy and about expanding the role of women in the government.
What I'm expecting from this, our new government, is more of women participation in its cabinet. I'm a media person. They should please help us review our media salary.
Charity is a manager at a non-profit organization. She hopes for better days in a country that is struggling with a weak economy, sectarian violence, and high crime.
Well, I'm hoping that this government will bring peace and reconciliation, because a lot of things are being misunderstood.
With both excitement and concern in the air, Nigerian women await the actions and policies of its new government. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
Sudan's warring sides are under pressure today to extend a shaky ceasefire in their battle for control of the country after two key international mediators signaled impatience with persistent truce violations. Yesterday, the United States and Saudi Arabia called out Sudan's military and its rival, the paramilitary rapid support forces, for breaches of a week-long truce which expires tonight. Sudan descended into chaos after fighting erupted in mid-April between the military led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the RSF commanded by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. There are estimates nearly 900 civilians have been killed and thousands wounded. The head of the United Nations Refugee Agency today warned estimates for the number of refugees Sudan may be too low. More than 350,000 people have already fled across borders, with most heading to Egypt, Chad, and South Sudan. More than 1 million have been displaced within Sudan. UNHCR's head, Filippo Grandi, said the agency had forecast about 1 million people would flee Sudan over 6 months. Now he says the number may be conservative. Gay activists in Uganda are calling for a repeal of the Anti-Homosexuality Act that President Yoweri Museveni signed into law today. Critics say the law, which allows life imprisonment and the death penalty in some cases, is the world's harshest anti-gay legislation. Amnesty International says the act violates the Constitution and expressed hope the courts will declare it illegal. Halima Atumani has the story from Kampala, Uganda.
President Museveni's signing of the Anti-Homosexuality Act of 2023 on Monday has left members of Uganda's LGBTQ community in shock. The new law calls for up to 20 years in prison for promoting homosexuality and life imprisonment for anyone convicted of homosexuality. The law also imposes a death penalty for what it calls aggravated homosexuality. This includes having sex with people categorized as vulnerable, including the elderly and children. Any Ugandan who does not report such cases is liable on conviction to spend 5 years in prison or pay a fine of 10 million Ugandan shillings, about $2,680. Also, journalists and other media figures will face 5 years in prison if they disclose the identity of a homosexual victim without the authority of the court or that person. Eric Ndaula is executive director of the Lifeline Youth Empowerment Center, an NGO in Kampala that provides support to Ugandans who are gay, bisexual, or queer. He tells VOA that the LGBTQ community is frightened over what will come next.
I am very scared, honestly. It was expected, but it came very abrupt today morning to just wake up to such news. We are still working together as the convening of equality to see our next step forward, but the news has just shocked us.
In April, Parliament passed the Anti-Homosexuality Act on a vote of 341-1. In a statement Monday, Parliament Speaker Anita Among said lawmakers heeded the concerns of Ugandans and legislated to protect the sanctity of the family. Among urged authorities to enforce the law in what she called a fair, steadfast, and firm manner. Amnesty International has described the law as draconian and says it hopes that Ugandan rights groups will advocate for its repeal. Roland Ebole, Amnesty International's regional researcher, spoke to VOA via phone.
We hope that we will continue working with rights groups to push or challenge, especially parliamentarians, to repeal this abhorrent law. I know the second option is very unlikely, considering that this was passed by a very large majority. So perhaps our hope right now is that the court will actually look at this law and see that it really is a violation on human rights.
International bodies that operate in Uganda, such as UNAIDS and USAID, have previously stated that the passing of the Anti-Homosexuality Act will not only complicate their work in Uganda, but reverse the gains made by Uganda in the fight against HIV/AIDS. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Ugandan military says some of their soldiers assigned to Somalia were captured by Al-Shabaab militants following Friday's attack at their base in the town of Bulomarar, 110 kilometers south of Mogadishu. Ugandan People's Defense Forces spokesperson, Brigadier General Felix Kulaigi, spoke with VOA Somali Service reporter Harun Maruf by phone today about the attack.
What we know is that the base was attacked by Al-Shabaab. We know that it appears the soldiers did not do the right response because they would have had a chance to destroy the big group of Al-Shabaab of about 800 that attacked them. The defense was well equipped. They had what it takes. So we think they were not prepared. They didn't do the right, take right decisions, and they fled the defense in the midst of the fire. out of the shock of the explosions, I think. And the rest of the details we shall get when the team gets on the ground.
And who is in control of the base at this time?
The base, our people are not yet back to the base, of course. So it is still empty.
Can you tell us exactly what led to the sudden collapse of UPDF forces at the base? Normally, we know that UPDF is very well trained and they have accustomed to fighting the insurgencies. What happened in this case? Why was it different?
That's what I am yet to know. The team we sent on the ground, which arrived there yesterday, we find out what happened. Because indeed, we are always invisible. We have never been beaten. What happened this time? It's a big question we want to find out.
So the question that everybody is asking is, tell us about the casualties. At this time, how many bodies were recovered? How many injuries? How many are missing? Al-Shabaab is claiming, as you know, that they have killed 137 soldiers. They also claim it they captured some prisoners of war. Your response?
Of course, that's not correct, because this was a company of 221. If they have killed all those and captured all those, then where did the balance come from? Like I said, those are the details I will give you once we have our investigations done. For now, I would be speculating.
Do we know how many survived?
Again, like I said, all those details I will give after the investigations are done.
Is Al-Shabaab way off from the truth in terms of death toll?
Yes, they are. They are, certainly the exaggerating.
What about the soldiers they claim to have captured? Do you believe some of your soldiers were captured by Al-Shabaab?
I don't just believe. I know some were.
How many do you think might have been captured?
That speculation I can't do.
And the bigger picture, where does this leave UPDF mission within ATMIS in Somalia? Does this change the calculation, the presence of UPDF in Somalia?
That leaves UPDF more determined to fight the terrorists of Al-Shabaab. It gives us more determination to deal with this enemy of peace in Somalia.
So how are you going to respond? Is Uganda going to send more troops? Are you going to go after Al-Shabaab? What's going to happen?
They will pay for that attack. No one attacks UPDF and goes scot-free. They will pay.
That was Brigadier General Felix Kolegie with the Ugandan People's Defense Forces. He was speaking with my colleague Harun Maruf. Kenya's President William Ruto today said his country would be signing a trade pact with Russia but gave no details. His statement comes during a previously unannounced visit by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov to Nairobi. The trip follows an Africa tour last week by his Ukrainian counterpart Dmytro Kuleba, with the warring sides each seeking to bolster support on the continent for their causes. Fighting in Ukraine continues 15 months after Russia invaded, and President William Ruto reiterated Kenya's steadfast position on respect for territorial integrity of member states as outlined in the UN Charter. He called for a resolution of the conflict that is, in a manner, respectful to the two parties. The Egyptian club Al Ahli defeated AS Douanes of Senegal 80-65 on Saturday in Kigali, Rwanda, to lift the 2023 Basketball Africa League trophy. Al Ahli's South Sudanese forward Nuni Omot tallied a game-high 22 points in the final and took home the Hakim Olajuwon Trophy as the league's most valuable player. VOA's Mokbilia Barrow and Chik Tero recap the action.
On this segment of ANT today, we have our VOA colleague, Chek Tiero, live from Kigali, Rwanda. Thanks for being with us today, Chek.
Thank you, Mubu. Nothing but net. Let's talk about it, bro.
Absolutely. The BAL just concluded this weekend with some exciting games. We will have Chek give us a rundown of the finals game, Al Ahli versus AS Dwan Sheikh. Talk to me about that game.
Well, we've seen Al Ahly team to give the first punch from the start. We saw that, and everybody was expecting to AS Dwan to do the same thing because they struggled even to beat AS Padmalian from Mali. So people really thought AS Dwan going to take lessons from that because if you are part of this big this team, Al Ahly, they have problems. If you start with them on defensive end, and offensive end, the big men can now move, which is a big man that AS Dwan had, and also Padmalian had. You saw how Padmalian was outrunning them on every position. So they had to calm the game and play the way they wanted to play. But you saw a different tactic from the head coach. He came to attack. He came to punch first. He didn't worry about the defensive end. He came to give them the first punch, and then for them to answer the first punch, and then they have taken advantage of that. Instead of AS Dwan come give the first punch by knowing their weakness. But I would imagine the head coach is a very experimented coach.
Absolutely. So Al Ahly beats AS Dwan. Who were the key players for Al Ahly to get the job done?
Of course, everybody knows who was the key player. Who was the key player for them, you know? the winner of Hakim Olajuwon Trophy, and he was the key player. But you can see that everybody play. I'm going to tell you one thing about the northern part of the country being really good. They are financially stable. They are able to bring consistency. They're able to make the player comfortable for everything they need to do.
Right.
And all these amazing teams, and they have that capability to do and consistently. They can bring good players and they stick together. And they have the financial need to really put the team together ahead of time and prepare for this league and more of the time. And if you see a lot of teams in Africa, they put the team together really late. You know, and we see it's Bera, one of the coaches, one player who joined them 2 weeks before.
I couldn't agree with you more. Lastly, if we can quickly touch on that Stade Malien versus Petro de Luanda game. Stade Malien, a debutant team, was able to get a victory and give Petro de Luanda their second loss of the tournament back-to-back after not losing anything from the conference. What did Stade Malien have to do in order to get the job done against the Angolan Giants?
We saw them with them in the Sahara Conference. That Stade Malien always comes strong when they get beat by any team. That Stade Malien team came strong when they get lost in a team. If you beat them the next game, whoever they get, they beat them by 20. And that's the competitiveness. And we saw that they had a lack of experience in these late minutes. That's why they lost Al Ahly on that team.
But Sheikh, lastly, what was the environment like in Kigali, and do you see that, you know, that the country is really taking this basketball game very seriously?
This month become a very sportsmanship month for Kigali, and this month of the year, like, everybody come here, Mugbe. You see, we saw a lot of celebrity, American celebrity, NBA stars. You know, you said mentioned the president. It was so many icons, African icon players. We saw a lot of in Mahini. You know, a lot of people that have the mentality to give up to Basketball Africa League move. It's the moment that, like we call it, the one that they're using sports as a soft power to get what they want. Majority of them, we saw Masai, who is coming, who's going to be here in a little bit for Giants. Final game, Mugbil, yeah. The president came in, even though the home team was not playing. That really showed that he's supporting of these things 100%.
Amazing, Sheikh. I'm so glad you guys had a great experience over there. Great reporting from Kigali throughout the entire playoff tournament. Thanks for being with us today, Sheikh.
Thank you, Mugbil.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.